we're surrounded by stories that just don't add up. Choices that appear to be baffling, actions that defy logic. But what if there's more to the story? On How Did It Make Sense, we explore the power of learning from experience and digging into the second stories that are always present. We talk to experts from diverse fields who are challenging the way we think about safety, risk, and decision making. Join us as we unlock the lessons hidden within everyday events. Some of these are high risk and some appear to be mundane, but all of them show how we can create a fairer, safer, and more resilient world. Josh, brilliant to see you. And, you know, I think the last time we saw a face-to-face discussion piece was at your Safety Differently book club, and that was really cool. And I love the way that you're bringing that community together. I'm thinking, do I do something like that across here? Maybe.
Yeah, look, what happens. It makes such a positive impact. Thank you so much, Stephen Harvey, and I. You know, we put a lot of work into it, Gareth. But you know, so many people smiling, connecting. They walk out of there, they're connecting outside of it. So thank you so much, and we still appreciated you being a guest. You're one of our highlights, mate.
Thank you. I love it. You know, you know, I'm passionate about this stuff, and it's why I've just got so much energy to bring to here. So those who don't know Josh Bryant, who are you? What do you do? Where are you? And what are you passionate about? What do you contribute in this space?
Look, you know, I'm shy and retiring. I don't really talk that much. I don't get out to conferences, etc. So no, I'm Josh Bryant. I work for a company called Mitchell Services. They're an Australian-based drilling company. So we drill holes in the ground to get rock samples or degassing. So we're not in oil and gas. We're more in the production side of things. So actually getting rock samples so that they can delineate the resource. So my role within that business, I'm the general manager, people, risk, and sustainability. So I look after all the risk side of things, event learning, operational like training, direct interface with employees. So like, you know, looking at, I guess, employee surveys and you know, that engagement piece. And then the sustainability piece. So we're an organisation of about 900 people across Australia. We own all our own equipment. So we own about 100 drilling rigs. We've got 25 different clients, 35 different projects at the moment. So we've got all these like little microclimates, Gareth. So you can't just go, oh yeah, I'll just change this. Like there's
what you mean one you don't have a homogenous culture across your whole organization?
I know. Like, you know, it's so easy. But I'll be honest, like everything I do is through my supervisor. So if I can engage a supervisor, I can enact change. Yeah. And that's what I'm most passionate about, is working really closely with our leadership team, trying to influence our board, supporting and really coaching those supervisors, but also trying to bring our clients along this journey as well of change and, you know, steering towards operational learning. Look, Gareth, as a business, we apply the HOP philosophies. It's just that's the methodology that we've chosen to use. And the main reason is it's landed with our supervisors, right? Because it's not about a frontline worker. It's about leaders. It's how leaders show up and you know, how they're responding to bad news, but also how they need to be curious about work. So, you know, that's just the lens we've chosen. It works quite well with us, you know, towards operational excellence.
Excellent. Excellent. And you've got a whole bunch of books and, you know, resources available to people, which is really cool. It's that to me, I think, is the awesome bit. It's like, oh, I wish I'd done that. They were already there. So well done to you and the teams. So
yeah, thank you. And I think, Gareth, like we try and share as much as we can. So like, we're not saying we're experts at what we do, but we're just trying to encourage businesses to share more about their journey and what they went through. Like, we stuffed it up so many times. Like we stumbled, we've got gravel, we've got the bark, you know, et cetera. Yeah. But we just love sharing those stories. And you know, hopefully it encourages other businesses to maybe explore this space.
Yeah. And you know, ultimately, that's what the purpose of this podcast is about, is to bring these ideas from multiple domains. And you know, not just the high risk stuff, but just people talking about work, what normal work
Yeah.
looks like, and the boring stuff, and yet there's a whole bunch of really interesting learning comes out of boring work.
Well, the thing is,
So
Gareth, 99% of the time things go well. Like you can't just go, oh yeah, cool, I'll just put my feet up on the desk and surf YouTube. Like go and be curious about how does it go well? Like how are people adapting? So yeah, being interested in normal work because that's what the majority of the time is.
absolutely. And humans are awesome at filling in those gaps. And the goal of this is to tell a couple of stories from different perspectives. So what's the first story you've got for us
Well,
for this session?
look, the main one, and I only introduced it to the community this year at a conference in Wollongong, right? The Safety Innovation Summit. And it's a story about Sebastian. So Sebastian was 23 years old. He'd only just joined the organization and he was working on one of our drilling rigs. And the easiest way to explain this, Gareth, is that they had pulled 800 meters of pipe out of the ground in 6 meter lengths, had changed a bit at the end of it, and then we're putting this pipe back into the ground. So that's the easiest way to do it. Now, as they put this pipe into the ground, it can be quite like tight or talky. So a way to get around this is they use a product called tacky grease, and it's this gross, like really thick mud looking goo, like it's like a toothpaste, a bright yellow toothpaste, right? But the way they apply this is they put gloves on and they get a big glob of it in their hand and literally like rub it on the outside of the pipe as it's going in. So to put this pipe in the ground, he's working with two other people. So he's working with T, who was the other driller's assistant, and then Johnny, who was the driller. So because Sebastian was so inexperienced, he was the one in charge of like putting the tacky grease on the outside of the pipe. So T would get what was called a hole plug and screw this onto the pipe. Then Johnny would lift up that pipe with the machine, and basically they would lower that pipe into the hole. And as they lowered it into the hole, Sebastian would have his hands out and basically rub grease on the outside. Now, when he was applying this, there's a thing called a rod spinner. So as the pipe goes through and gets right near the end of its 6 meters, like these jaws grab onto it, and then the rod spinner, which is above the jaws, spins and takes the hole plug off so that they can then move that and attach the next set of pipe. So it just goes like it's just like a routine. So Sebastian had his hands below the rod spinner and in the area where these foot clamps were. So the pipe would go through, he's rubbing it on the outside, then he would like he'd be crouched down, but he would lean back. Johnny would then apply the foot clamps, grab onto the pipe, rod spinner, lift the hole plug out, put the next pipe on, lift that pipe up, screw that on, and then lower it in. And as they're lowering in, Sebastian's rubbing this grease on the outside. And they'd done this successfully 18 times. And then Johnny basically looked up. He looked up the mast to see where the winch rope was going. And as it's come past, in the corner of his eye, he's noticed that Sebastian has moved out of the way, which means the pipe must be in position, and he's applied the foot clamps. But Sebastian still had his hands in the foot clamp area, and it's actually crushed several bones in Sebastian's hands, in this foot clamp area. Sebastian let out a scream, and as soon as Johnny has turned around, he's basically taken his hand off the lever, which opens the foot clamp, and then Sebastian was able to basically retrieve his hands out of it.
Wow.
So the big thing here is that the area where Sebastian was putting his hands should have a guard there, and there was no guard.
So you could
And
also, the traditional safety approach would be, what's he got his hands doing in the energy space? Why is he not paying attention to what's going on? The sort of the counterfactuals, you could quite easily look at this and go, Sebastian, be better, pay more attention.
yeah,
Be careful.
and the other problem is, right, we talked to everyone else and said, oh, like, do you guys do it this way? And they're like, no, we always do it above the rod spinner. We always stand up and we have our hands outstretched. So They're not following like how people normally do it across the business. Like, why would you put your hands in the foot clamp area? Like, what were they thinking?
So you sit there and go, well, hang on a minute, but people have got a, vested interest in their safety. They've got a vested interest in delivering stuff. 18 times they've already done this before, and I'm guessing there's a whole bunch of other stuff. So, there's obviously a lot more to it than this. And, given your background and why you're on here is, so what is the second story behind this? Because the first story is that linear, simple, be better, be more careful. What's the second story behind this?
Gareth, the thing with this, right, is we just implemented critical risk management, and we'd successfully been doing that for about 18 months. So this is going out and verifying controls and ensuring guards are in place and that people understand the critical steps, et cetera. And we haven't had any severe injuries at all. So you just go, as a business, like, how did this happen? Like how? Like what were they thinking? Like what? Who sticks their hand in an area that's going to crush you? Like that's not what a sane person would do.
And the
But there's
manufacturer is going to give you a machine that's got guards on it, because otherwise he's not going to get it certified to get issued, and you're not going to buy it because it doesn't have those protections in place. So.
so there is a lot to the second story, right? So this machine, as it was driven to site. It's in a really remote location, and it actually lost parts of the drill rig on its way there. And what we found is that the guard that covers this area, is literally an inch high and doesn't actually cover those foot clamps areas. It's actually called a foot guard, so that people can lean their foot on it while rods are coming down. Right? It's absolutely crazy. So there's no. That the original equipment manufacturer said, well, there's no ta that task that would require anyone to put their hands there. So why does it need to be guarded, right?
Yeah, that's a fair call.
They're called foot clamps. So like, why would you stick your hands there? There's a guard that covers that entire area, but it can't be put in place while the rod spinner's there. So the guard that actually covers these foot clamps where Sebastian crushed his hands, can't actually be put in place while they're doing this activity at all. You need to remove the rod spinner and then that guard can be put in place. Now,
So
the
what's
thing
that
here
guard
is
for then? Is that just like a transit guard?
it's a tran there was a little transit guard and then there's a main guard. So you take the rod spinner off, then you put the main guard on, and then you can keep working, right? So it is, it's literally a transit guard. You can't put the main guard in because it doesn't fit. Like the rod spinner actually doesn't allow that guard to fit, right? So the other story here is that T and Sebastian were the two driller's assistants, and using this hole plug is a little bit of an art, all right? So that's why Sebastian got put on the greasing duties and T got put on the hole plug duties. Now, the problem is the hole plug that we sent them was unknurled, so it didn't have any like
Like
markings or
groovy,
etchings in
whatever,
it. So it was
Rookie
literally
stuff.
like a solid piece of like pipe of like steel. And so what they were trying to do is keep the grease from touching that hole plug. So otherwise they wouldn't be able to use it and they wouldn't be able to do this task. So they're just like, well, it's unknurled. We've got to do this job. So like, let's try and keep the grease away from that. The thing is too, is that the rod spinner had been giving them trouble all morning and they'd already pulled it apart 3 times. So once they put that in place, they're like, we've got to get this pipe into the ground. We're not doing this again. Like, let's just try and keep the grease away from the rod spinner. So they were trying to keep the grease off the rod spinner and off the hole plug. So to do that, what do? Try and keep the grease away from that area and you put in the foot clamp area. So then you look, then as you raise Gareth and you go, well, why would someone put their hand in an energized area like where you could get your hands crushed? It's not automatic. It's not a robot. It relies on the driller to basically pull a lever and
Gauge,
close that area. Why would Johnny close it while his hands are in there? Like, so Sebastian's like, nothing can go wrong here. Like it's not energized unless he pulls that lever. The thing is he was crouched down, which they normally do it standing up. So he was crouched down. And what happened is when Johnny looked up, Sebastian actually rocked to get his balance. So he didn't actually move back, he rocked. And so in Johnny's mind, he'd moved out of the
Just
way. And
movement, yeah.
he saw movement, right? So that's why he closed the foot clamp. So our thing with this is, as a business, we were accepting live work. We were accepting moving pipe and people applying a grease to the outside. Like it's like agricultural. I'm really sorry, nothing against agriculture. Like it's an archaic way of doing things. Like there's no doping brush, there's no automated way of applying this tacky grease. So they were just trying to do a job, and this isn't production over safety. Like, the rod spinner needed to be protected and was malfunctioning, and we need to keep the grease off it. We need to keep the grease off the hole plug. I can control the energy of these foot clamps going. 18 times they were successful. So, as the pipe went down, and it's not the first time they'd done that, right? This is the first time they'd applied the grease this way. But yeah, so that's what it taught us as well, is that the guarding was inefficient. We've got a new person. There was no Sebastian. It's a cultural thing too, in that Sebastian 100% trusted his driller that it was a safe work environment. Like, there's no reason those foot clamps would close by themselves while his hands was in there. Like, he felt safe.
Oh, absolutely. Trust has to exist in these environments. And just, I think you in Australia know the scale of your country and the distances involved. It never ceases to surprise me as to how big some of these transits are and where the locations are. So, even if there is I'm going to say a genuine technical fault, you say there isn't a production pressure, but you've got professionals who are proud of their work and they know that they've got, that bit of, yeah, we can stop the job at any time. But there's a pride that sits there and goes, no, we can do this. And I would say that probably is probably quite strong in the mining industry in Australia of get stuff done. And so if we can find a way around it, we will do. And we believe that actually it requires a manual application of energy. The cognitive biases we have, the assumptions that people go, ah, assumptions make an ass out of you and me. And my immediate retort is assumptions make the world go round at the pace it does. If we didn't make assumptions, we wouldn't be able to operate the way we do. It's fundamental to
Exactly.
what's going on. And so you sit there and go, right, this, and what's really cool is, it's a real shame, and I hope Sebastian's hands are better, but it's really cool that you sit there and go, how do you then develop a learning product? We were talking immediately beforehand, and a piece that I brought out yesterday in the presentation at the Defence Diving Symposium is that organisations don't learn, people do, and so it's a comp. It's that bit that says, how do we keep those stories alive? So, what did you do within Mitchell Services to help with that?
So w when the event happened, I basically got on a plane straight away, met Sebastian, took him back home, and talked to him and Belinda, worked through the story. But we basically recreated it, Gareth. I used a 360 camera, and my iPhone, and basically said, "Show me what happened," and the guys recreated it, and then I put together a short video, and it's only 4 minutes long, right? But what we've done with all our events is to go, here's the context of the event, right? This is what happened, giving the viewer an idea of like what happened and the work environment and the task involved. And then we move to what did we learn? So then we share those things that we're learning. Like even with this one, people were going, why didn't they just follow the procedure? Well, the procedure was bashed together. It was four procedures put all together because the client said we had too many procedures. So we created this 37-page document, and the step about putting the guard on and applying the grease was on page 19, step 37. Like, how's anyone going to remember that? That's crap, right? So we actually put that in the learnings as well. And then the last bit we add is like things you need to know. So we've built these for new people coming into the organization so that Mitchell Services doesn't develop organizational amnesia. These are the high potential events that have happened in our business that have changed the way that we do work. So we've got a suite of 14 at the moment. The earliest one is probably 2016, where a sinkhole developed under one of our drilling rigs. But we've been sharing these with clients. But the thing is, Gareth, if you join Mitchell Services tomorrow, as part of your induction, you will sit through those 14 short videos so that you can
That's
see
only an
these high
hour.
potential
That's
events
cool.
and what we learned. Yeah.
And I think, we were discussing beforehand is how do you, as you grow more of those lessons, and how do you get that? I was chatting to my coach a little while ago, and they had an app which they use for their membership, and it was basically uploading podcast videos, membership coaching videos, and it was called Searchy.io, and it's called something else now. I think it's membership.io, but the idea is that you can upload videos into it. It will then take all the transcriptions, all of the words, and as a member of Claire's program, you could just type in and go, tell me about so and so, and it'll go through all the transcripts and then pull out the timestamps for the videos that Claire's recorded and put into her membership piece. And I'm thinking
Wow.
that is, there's this bit about AI. Oh my God, oh, sorry, AI being really scary. But in terms of processing and handling shed loads of data like that and finding things for you, actually, that, and so I'm always looking at this bit of how do you scale it? How do you grow it? What are the problems about scaling learning? And so actually, you could sit there and go, right, here's a great way of building better toolbox talks. Right. Does anybody remember anything? No. Right. Quick, blah. Give us something about this. Right, here's a 4-minute video. And people, I've seen that video. It's really cool. And it's not a, really, but it actually brings it to life and little animations and things. But it's really cool. And you sit there, go, that's how you can make a much better safety moment or a toolbox talk or bring stuff together.
Yeah.
And there's so much that we can get out of conversations that you don't get out of a written report.
Gareth, we actually shared that with the mine regulator where we work. So it happened in one state. Australia is divided into a number of states, right? So Sebastian's injury. Oh, I just want to clarify too. Sebastian made a full recovery and he's actually back on our drilling rigs. I always forget that. He and I grew really close through this investigation and through his recovery. But yeah, I just let you know that he's all
Yeah,
right.
that's
But
good.
this happened in one state. So because they couldn't touch me because it was a different jurisdiction, I went to our mine. I say that with a cheeky pun, all right? But I went to the mining regulator in another state and I actually shared the investigation, the event learning report, and I
Yeah.
shared that video. And they were like, can we share this with all our inspectors? And I'm like, absolutely,
Absolutely. That's
100%.
what this is for. Yeah.
And when I sent the event learning report to the regulator in the state where Sebastian's event happened, I got a two-word email back that basically said, good work. That's all I got. Because we actually owned it and we were able to provide
Yeah.
more of that context on that sense-making, Gareth. Like, this is why it made sense for the crew. They're not bad people. They're not under-trained. They're very skilled. And it made sense for them to do it this way. But that's the environment also that Mitchell Services gave them. This is the task that we made them do. This is the way that you apply the grease. And this is how the machine is set up that you can't guard that area when you've got a rod spinner in place. Like, that's why it made sense.
So the bigger bit then, the organizational piece is, I'm guessing you sort of invested in some more machinery that was a little bit more reliable. And so what did you do structurally and organizationally? So you've created this cool animation, this video, and put together this event learning report. What did you do? Because we need to change the system because these are
Yeah.
systemic issues. What did you do in terms of that?
Look, I'm not plugging one methodology over another, right? But this made us step back and go, we do a lot of critical control verifications, we're verifying barricades, et cetera. But this isn't happening in high risk work. This is happening in normal work. So what's happening when nothing bad's happening? So we then the organization pivoted towards operational learning. And for us, we used the 4Ds. So what doesn't make sense, what's difficult, what's different, What do you find dangerous, or where you have to make do and maybe take shortcuts? So that Sebastian's van actually triggered us to implement the 4Ds as part of our operational learning. And like my CEO was just like, holy shit, how do these people come to work for us every day when they've got, a shortage of tools, they've got no storage, supplies wrong. The guy who gets onboarded had to do a course three times because we'd set it up wrong. Like it's just all these small, like little rubs, right? So the 4Ds actually like changed the way the operation works. But we then introduced technology. So we had a look at our entire organization and said, where are we doing live work everywhere? Like where are people having to interact with live work, et cetera? And we've introduced a lot of hands-free techniques now, Gareth. So like we've got robot rigs and stuff like that. So, they basically use an Xbox controller and an arm comes across now and grabs the pipe so that they don't have to. So we've got this really fine-tuned way of looking at work going, is there a live work interaction here? Are there any critical steps involved where it involves a human action that's irreversible and intolerable? And then this operational learning piece, so through the use of the 4Ds.
That's really cool. It's really, and it's my sort of experiences, unfortunately, normally takes an injury or a fatality for an organization to go, ah, this is serious. And what's really cool is that you've taken the positive view as opposed to, oh, just fix that worker and tell them to be a
Yeah,
bit
train
better
them.
next time.
Put them
So
all through the training.
yeah, that's it. And you sit there going, and where is
Yeah,
the training for this?
Gareth, what really, this is what really actually pissed me off about this event is that when we implemented critical risk management, that was proactive, right? We didn't have an event. Nothing made us do it, right? It was there was basically a big review in mining and saying that critical risk management was important. And we were like, well, we can't wait for our clients to do this to us. So let's just go and do it ourselves. And that's what really pissed me off is that it took Sebastian's crush injury for us to realize these live work exposures and, the implementation of operational learning, doing more focused learning teams. But we're a better business as a result, right? Like, yes, it spurred action, but we're a better business as a result.
No, it's really cool. It's really cool. And I was just going to pick up a point that you'd mentioned about the regulator, and it's something in David Marquette's book called "Turn the Ship Around," where he
Turn the
talks.
ship around, yeah.
So one of the chapters is called "Embrace the Regulators," and actually using the regulator as a means to inform you when you're trying to do high risk work. So how does somebody else manage this? And I know in the UK there's a struggle with that because the health and safety executive can't be seen to be given advice, because if they give advice and something goes wrong, the organization can go back to the HSC and say, hey, look, you told us this. But actually, it's that bit of sharing best practice. And that's nothing, that's an awesome thing to do, is
Yes.
sit there and go, right, this is what good looks like. And, in the Kinevan framework, we talk about good practice rather than best, because in a complex space, there is no best.
No.
And we're trying to work out what's going on. So, you sit there, and I think the important piece as well is anybody who's listening to this or watching this, is the ability to abstract from this scenario or somebody else's podcast scenario, whatever, and sit there and go, where are the similarities? Because the learning, you're not going to have another hand crush injury on that little, drilling rig like
No.
that, because people have learned. But you sit there and go, what are the conditions that are surrounding that? And I think that's really cool in terms of your event learning reports is, first line, what are the conditions that support normal work? Wow,
Yep.
cool.
Yes.
Not why did this go wrong and what can we do to stop it happening the next time? What can we do to
Yeah.
stop this happening from the next time? This won't happen again.
Yeah, look, what Mark Alston is a big driver for me. He runs investigations differently, and he always taught me that, with any event, step back, just stop and step back and ask how it normally happens rather than diving into the event itself. So, that was really important for us to learn. And that's us doing that and taking a breath actually taught us that, well, everyone usually stands there with these gloves on and puts grease on the outside. And we actually reached out to our competitors and said, "Hey, we've had this event. We just want to let you know." And they were like, "Holy shit, we do it that way too." So,
Awesome, awesome. That's a proper sort of infinite game from Simon Sinek, is basically everybody gets better in that
yeah,
process.
exactly.
So that's really cool. Really good to hear, a great learning outcome and a great learning story, which, normally would just be shown in the media or the press as hand injury, worker not paying attention, working with
What
life.
were they thinking?
Yeah. It's like, oh, it's obvious that that was going to go wrong. It's like, well, no, it's not. If it was obvious, they wouldn't have done that. So, and actually, they protected themselves because of the processes they got. But we end up with that situation of an uncomfortableness. We talk about these error-producing conditions of work site conditions. What makes it hard to stay where we are? And that might be height, reach, weight, size, whatever. Actually, the anthropometrics change how we interact with systems as well. So
Yeah.
the final piece of this sort of podcast is a recommendation for a book or a paper or a short video or a long video that basically reinforces what you believe and what the value of looking deeper.
I reached and went, "Oh, everyone's going to pick the Field Guide to Understanding Human Error, or they're going to pick, Conklin's Five Principles or something like that." So I reached for two. And there are actually two that meant a lot for me with Sebastian's case, right? So the first one is Edgar Schein's Humble Inquiry, because that's what it takes, right? You cannot walk into an event or into a workplace with this parent-child view that you know everything and you can fix it, and this is bad people doing a bad thing. You need to step back and show humble inquiry and actually be really curious about work. So that book's amazing. And the other one, it's a weird one, right? But it's actually one of my favorite books, and it's really easily written, is Workplace Fatalities: A Failure to Predict. And it's one of Conklin's books, right? And it's an obscure one because everyone's going, how can you just read about fatalities? But he talks in that book about that it's not a failure to stop it. It's about failure to control the energy. So that, to me, really helped us form this framework for our critical risk management, making work better, et cetera. So yeah, for me, that workplace fatality is a failure to predict. The audiobook for it's really good, and I've had it on in my car several times, and my kids get in and go, "Oh, great, you're listening to that book about death again. Well done." So, but for me, I highly recommend it. It's a fantastic read.
Good. I'll put the links in the show notes for that. Josh, thank you much for sharing your knowledge, your experience. I know that it's cracker sparrows at your end or magpie squawking at your end. Give it. So thank you very much for your time, and I hope to catch up with you soon. Take care, mate.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Gareth.